So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. Today with me I have Seth Godden, and I'm very excited because this is, Seth, thank you so much for sparing a little bit of time with us today.
It's an absolute pleasure, Adrian. Thanks for doing this.
You're so welcome. And I must say that I do this interview series, and my objective for this year was to interview yourself by the end of the year. So I'm about a month ahead of schedule, I must say.
Just under the wire.
So first of all, we wanted to talk about you've got a new book coming out called The Icarus Deception. And what I want you to do, if it's okay with you, is tell us a bit about The Icarus Deception's backstory and why you chose to fund it in such an interesting way using Kickstarter.
Well, what I've tried to do throughout my career is take my own advice. Permission marketing was marketed using permission marketing. For unleashing the idea virus, I gave the book away to create an idea virus. Uh-huh. Purple Cow originally came in a milk carton because it was one way to make the distribution of a book remarkable. Uh-huh. The Icarus Deception is largely about one simple sentence, which is, this might not work. Okay. And I really want to hammer home for people that we have a need for art in our world, not decoration and not painting, but the work of human beings who, through generosity, connect with other human beings and make change happen. Mm-hmm. And you can't make art unless you're willing to fail. And for me, I knew that if I just called up my previous publisher, Penguin, and said, let's bring out a book, that while it might not succeed, it certainly wasn't going to fail.
Sure.
The idea of going to Kickstarter then was twofold. One, it might not work. That very publicly laying out something that had not been done before by a well-known author could be a really vivid public failure. And two, I didn't do it to make money, because I can make money by selling a book the old way. I did it to establish to other authors that it was possible. And so I was clear at every step along the way, and I didn't use any sort of connections or unfair advantages to do it. I just said, here's how I did it. Here's the step-by-step method. It takes 7 years, but it works. And you can do it too. And so those two things combined led me to want to use Kickstarter to build it. It was a huge pain in the neck, a lot more behind the scenes clicking and typing than it looks like.
Yeah.
But I was privileged to be able to write not one, not two, but four books in the course of several months, or at least put them together. And that was a blast, and I'm glad I got to do it.
I mean, I must say that when I saw the initial campaign, I just thought, well, first of all, I thought the rewards that you put on there and that everything else, I thought, because I went for the, I think it's the $111 Behemoth option or something or other. And I just thought it was such a wonderful project to get involved with, because it's, you're showing people the way in a way. And it's a lot of it's about taking risk in a way and being willing to fail and almost learning through that. Do you think?
Oh, that's absolutely it. You know, that the, you know, I promised people like you a book that weighed more than 10 pounds and was 800 pages long. It ended up weighing 19 pounds and came in a container that weighed 60,000 pounds across the ocean. And at every step along the way, everything could have fallen apart. We came very close several times to doing that. And I had made a promise to thousands of people, and maybe it wasn't going to come true. I think that feeling that feeling is an important part of being alive.
And why do you think it's, I mean, it comes back to the main thesis of the book that you talk about. You want to encourage people within this connection economy to make art, you know, to take risks, to do stuff, to try stuff. Why do you think that's so important these days? I mean, is it because the nature of the world that we live in is changing?
So 100 years ago, or 80 years ago, the ideal organization was one where you had one person who did design or innovation creation, and you had 10,000 people who executed on his ideas, and it was always a he.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, Henry Ford had 100 people who figured out what the car should look like and what the technology was, and 100,000 men who built it. That was called leverage, and that's what industrialization is about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, you, all by yourself, sitting in front of a computer, create a broadcast that is heard around the world by thousands of people.
Yeah.
It's possible for someone like Chris Anderson to sit in his home in San Francisco, design something, press a button, have it built in China, using technology that has been refined by hundreds or thousands of people and have that touch millions. That means that the leverage isn't 100 people with 100,000 doing their work. It means one person can press a button and it just happens. All of us now are on the design side if we choose to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge shift because most of us were raised to do what we were told, not raised to figure out what to do next.
I think it's also that's the way that we were educated as well, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, you know, parents have, with good intention, engaged in a multi-decade brainwashing process that involves school to train people to be good employees.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting, because I mean, that's an area that I'm also interested in, and I've got a little project that I'm going around youth and unemployment and their employability, as it were. And what strikes me is that we've got this situation where we are educating, it's almost like we're battery farming young people in education. And then we're at the end of the education process, we're throwing open the doors and we're saying, right, now you've got to become free range chickens. And you have lots of young people that are wandering around sort of startled by the light, not really knowing what to do. So I think some of the lessons here apply to both people of all ages, whether you're in work, in a job, in a salary, with a salary, in a corporation, or you're a freelance professional, or you're an entrepreneur, or you're a young person thinking about starting off their career. Don't you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact is that people who eat a lot of eggs don't like to think about battery farms of chickens because it makes the eggs a lot less tasty.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to describe is that the market for eggs is drying up really fast and that it was always wrong to take away the dreams and opportunities of our young people. But now it's not just wrong, it's foolish because we don't need the eggs anymore.
Okay. So in the book, I understand the main thesis of the book, and it's about encouraging people and almost giving them, you know, a number of nudges to go out and just do stuff and try stuff and learn things and almost become the people that they have the potential to be. But do you also go into, here's some steps that you need to think about in order to do that? Because that's quite a big change for a lot of people.
Well, you know, most learning involves either a map or a compass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the compass business, not the map business.
Okay.
My job is to both describe the urgency of the situation as well as make it clear to people that they are capable, without being picked by someone else, to go make art. But the thing about art is if someone gives you a map, it's not art anymore. It's paint by numbers.
Sure.
And no one values that. So what I find fascinating is that the cost of failing today is so incredibly low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go ahead and start a podcast, but how many people didn't? I blog every day, but how many people don't?
Yes.
And the reason that people don't blog is because they're afraid. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is it turns out that writer's block did not exist and had no name before the 1940s.
Okay.
And no one in the year 1910, not one person on the planet had writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
And so writer's block isn't something that we're born with. Writer's block is something we are learned into. We are taught.
Yes.
And we are taught it because we believe when the stakes are high, we should back off. And part of what the Icarus Deception argues is that the stakes are high, but that backing off is the worst thing we could possibly do.
Mm-hmm. So if I take this, the idea, and I said to you, so what advice would you give to somebody who is, say, a small business owner, an entrepreneur, or an executive that is watching or listening or reading the notes from this when it comes to their projects? What would be the one piece of advice that you would say to them on the back of the Icarus Deception?
Well, if you take the cover off the hardcover and turn it around,
yeah,
there's a picture from NASA of the sun, and it says right on there, fly closer to the sun. And what I'm saying to every organization and every individual and every student and every teacher and doctor and person who touches someone else in any way is figure out how to set up a life, an environment, a workplace where it is clear that failing is cheap, And it is clear that failing is not fatal. And if you can learn how to, in small steps, start doing innovative work, start doing unique work, start doing something where you can say, here, I made this, then you're on your way to doing it in the small. And it's only after you do it in the small that you get a chance to do it in the large.
That's fascinating. What I want to do is come back to the word you use, and you talk about doing unique works. And I think what's really interesting is, and that's it comes back to that the block and the fear idea, is that unique is a relative word in a way. It doesn't necessarily need to be. A lot of people get stopped by the idea that they don't create something that they think is unique, and actually they have to think about it from a perspective of what other people find as unique and useful and artful and things. And sometimes that unique is a journey rather than just a destination.
Yes, art involves touching someone else in a way that hasn't occurred before. So when a doctor works with a patient, a kid who's got a knee problem, she can do it exactly by the book as some sort of automatic bureaucrat.
Mm-hmm.
Or in that moment, she can be a person. She can empathize. She can look the person in the eye. She can do real medicine as opposed to something out of the textbook. And is that unique? No, all good doctors do that.
Sure.
But in that moment, is it art? Is it something you have to own? Yes. And it's that idea that people own it, that they are not a cog in a machine, but they are an individual who stands for something. That is where we start.
And that's where the art is. So thank you for that, Seth. I mean, that's really great. I always finish these conversations with one question, or towards the end I ask one question, and that question is, what would you like to shamelessly plug?
Oh, isn't that what we've been doing?
But you also get one last chance too.
Here's the thing about shameless plugs. You know, when a Hollywood celebrity shows up on TV because she has a new movie coming out, no one feels uncomfortable about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
But when your brother-in-law who sells life insurance shows up and once again pushes you on choosing whole life instead of some other thing, it makes everyone uncomfortable.
Sure.
And the difference is that feels selfish.
Mm-hmm.
It feels selfish because we just figured deep down that he wouldn't be talking about something so boring if it wasn't that he was getting paid a lot.
Sure.
And what I have done with my work is intentionally separated whether or not I get paid. I don't do any consulting. I don't do any investing. The amount of royalties you make from a book is really pretty small.
Uh-huh.
I have an idea to sell. I don't have a book to sell, which is why if people want to read my blog for free, that's great with me.
Mm-hmm.
So my shameless plug is as follows. I would like to plug the idea that whether or not people pay a penny, they go do something that scares them. And that if I can encourage a million people to go generously do something frightening, I will consider it a good day's work.
That's fantastic. The other reason I include that question and the idea around shameless plugs and things is more from a British psyche perspective, because we are quite backwards at coming forward sometimes. And what I like to do is I ask people that question because it gives, in a way for me as well, it's almost like teaching myself, is sometimes we have to step forward, not just to force things on people, but actually to speak up and to do things that matter.
I think that's fabulous, and I'm glad for the work you do, and I hope your readers or listeners appreciate you, because it's not easy.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, and thank you for your time today, and I'll make sure I get that all linked up. Is there a website to the Icarus Deception right now, or should I link it up to the
Yeah,
blog?
It's. I think if you go to www.theicarusdeception.com, it should be working, and if it's not, let me know and I'll fix it.
All right, fantastic. Seth, thank you again for your time, and that's been brilliant. And let's see if we can reach out to a million people.
Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. We'll see you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.